on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, or on the second Thursday of every month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio or finding help searching for past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had. Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number. You weren't a name.
You want to be a human.
I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
Oh, the law. The law. When they hang my husband, is that just?
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name's Noah, and I'm your host for today's show. Right now, there's a funding drive going on at CKUT. You can donate during our show, and if you donate over $25, you can pick from a list of books that we're giving away as prizes. Those books include Clandestine Occupations by Diana Block, who we'll hear from later on the show, Condemned by Keith Lamar, Jailbreak Out of History by Butch Lee, Captive Genders, the second edition by Eric Stanley and Nat Smith, Raising the Civil Dead, Prisoners and Community Radio by Heather Anderson, Escaping the Prism, Fade to Black by Jaleel Muntakim, and you can also get a copy of the 2017 Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar, which we'll also hear about later on the show. So today's show will feature interviews about two of the prizes. Like I said, we'll be talking with Helen from the Certain Days Calendar Collective and Diana Block, who is the author of Clandestine Occupations. But first, some news. Anarchist prisoner Marius Mason is raising money in order to be able to go to school. His supporters have started a generosity.com page to raise funds for coursework costs, an application fee, and books. If you'd like to contribute, you can go to generosity.com/education-fundraising/Marius, that's M-A-R-I-U-S, dash Mason, M-A-S-O-N, dash S, dash education, dash 2. So again, education-fundraising/Marius-Mason-S-education-2 if you want to contribute to Marius Mason's school fund. Folks on the outside have been shining a light on the situation facing Adam Capay, a 23-year-old Indigenous man who's been held in solitary confinement in a Thunder Bay jail for 4 years while awaiting trial. On Tuesday, the Globe and Mail reported that despite growing demands to release Capet from solitary, the minister in charge of Ontario's prisons will not release him. The minister has called for another review of the provincial prison system instead of making immediate changes. According to itsgoingdown.org, political prisoner Seth Hayes has suffered from 3 diabetic comas in the past 2 months. Hayes, who has been in prison for over 40 years and has lost many parole hearings in a row since 1998, has been dealing with uncontrolled diabetes for over 15 years. His supporters are demanding that Seth be given an insulin pump / sugar monitor immediately to avoid near-fatal diabetic comas. His supporters say that the New York State Department of Corrections, are aware that Seth needs this medical device, but they are not moving fast enough to make this happen. Outside supporters are being asked to call and fax Carl J. Konigsman, the Deputy Commissioner and Chief Medical Officer for the New York State Department of Corrections. His phone number is 518-457-7073. Please demand that Robert Seth Hayes be given an insulin pump / sugar monitor immediately. Anarchist prisoners in Mexico have ended their hunger strike. According to Fernando Bersenas, one of the hunger strikers, they decided to end their hunger strike because some of the strikers were experiencing deteriorating health conditions and ran the risk of irreversibly damaging their health. The anarchist prisoners will continue to fast daily until 2 p.m. Next, we'll hear an interview with Diana Block. Diana has been a radical activist since the 1970s. She was a founding member of San Francisco Women Against Rape, the Prairie Fire Organizing Committee, the California Coalition for Women Prisoners, and the Jericho Movement for Political Prisoners. She's the author of the memoir Arm the Spirit, A Woman's Journey Underground and Back, as well as the novel Clandestine Occupations and Imaginary History. She lives in San Francisco with her life partner, former political prisoner Claude Marx. We aired a part of a longer interview with Diana during our shows in August and September. Today we speak to Diana about the book she wrote that we are giving away as part of our funding drive.
So, welcome back to the Prison Radio Show, Diana. I don't know if everyone who's listening now has listened to the interviews we did with you before, so if you would like to reintroduce yourself, that would be great.
Okay, thank you so much for having me. It's really a great pleasure and honor to be on your show. I'm Diana Block, and I have been a social justice feminist activist for many years. I've written a couple of books, and I think right this show we're going to talk about my writing, right?
Yeah, totally. So you've done a lot of different types of writing over the years, and in your memoir you publish pieces of your poetry, and you've also written a novel. Can you start off by talking briefly about the role writing has played in your life as someone who was living underground, as a radical activist, and as a woman?
Yeah, great to start there. Well, I've been writing since I was in high school in different ways. I have, it's something that is both something I enjoy, and it's also a skill I've developed over the years. I wrote creative fiction in high school and some in college, but then when I became more politically active, that part of my writing really dropped from my repertoire. I guess in that era, writing poetry and fiction was not seen as that politically important, and so I turned my writing skills to many pamphlets, journal writing. I was part of the editorial collective of Breakthrough, a political journal, for a number of years. And it wasn't until I went underground, ironically, that I took up more creative writing once again. In that period, since I couldn't write flyers or political journals anymore, I really needed to figure out a way to express myself and how to grapple with so many different things that were going on. And so I started taking creative writing classes and was able to kind of tap into a part of me and a creative part of me that I hadn't really been using or accessing for many years. And that was wonderful. It really was. It was an amazing outlet for me. It enabled me to communicate in different ways with other people who I was in classes and in community settings with. And it kind of laid the basis for me picking up many years later in a more creative approach to writing, which I did both in my memoir and then also in my most recent book, my novel.
So can we talk about timeline quickly? You wrote the memoir first, I think, and you wrote Clandestine Occupations, the novel, much more recently. Can you talk a little bit about, like, the timing of putting out the memoir and then putting out the novel?
Right. So when we first came back from being underground, there was a certain amount of publicity on our case, and there was also a lot of people in our community who really encouraged me to write a memoir quickly because, you know, as everyone knows, when you have an experience like that, it is good to share. There are ways that people really are interested and curious. Some of the people asking were from more the mainstream media, and we were very suspicious of those requests. But I really did, from a very early point, feel like I did want to write some type of a memoir. However, it took me many years after I returned. I returned in 1995. I didn't actually publish my memoir until 2009, which is quite a long time. But during that period, I was raising my kids. I was doing a lot of other political work. I also had a full-time job to make money. So looking back on it, it's not so very surprising that it took me that long to really write the memoir. And actually, also looking from hindsight, I can see that it really was a more reflective and comprehensive piece, the memoir, when I finally wrote it, than if I had just been propelled by in the moment when we got back to put some things down about our underground experience. This way, when I did get to the memoir, I actually was able to trace the whole arc of our experience, my experience from before I went underground, back into my parts of my childhood, and then also through to the political work I had been doing since I returned from being underground in the public sphere. So I think that waiting really proved a good thing in my case. The novel came after that. So I don't know if I should jump into that too.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, Clandestine Occupations is the novel. It's your most recent book. Let's talk about what led you to write that book specifically and what the writing process was like.
So as I was finishing my memoir, they were a very linked in my writing process, actually. There were many things. I talked about a lot of things in my memoir, but there were things that I couldn't talk about. And some of that had to do with confidentiality and aspects of people and life and issues that, even though they were in the past, I didn't feel like I could violate those aspects of privacy. And so I thought about how can I actually grapple with these issues in a way that is respectful to the people involved and that is also being able to tell something real that can be shared with other people. So I just started thinking about a novel, and even though I had never written a novel before, I had in both in high school, college, and while I was underground, written a number of short stories. It was a format that I had become more comfortable with, or a genre, I should say, that I had become more comfortable with. That's fiction. And I did construct the novel as a series of short stories, I guess, although they are threaded together and they end up as really, I think, a coherent novel rather than just short stories individually. So that was one of the reasons, for the reasons of maintaining privacy and confidentiality around certain issues. Another reason I wanted to write a novel was I really wanted to get inside other people's heads and not just my own. I mean, obviously a memoir is very much a reflection of one's own perspective and not really an attempt to give voice to others. So, but there were so many people I had met both underground and since I came back throughout my life whose perspectives were not mine, did not coincide exactly with how I saw things, and yet they were very important in my experience for really understanding the world. They influenced me, I influenced them, and so I felt like I wanted to use the novel to explore different people's points of view, not just my own. And over the course of writing it, I started seeing the need to explore points of view, not even of people, one person that I had known specifically, but of people who were composites and fictional characters and were driven more by my sense that this is a story that needs to be told. So, for example, one of the stories in the Clandestine Occupations, the novel, is told from the point of view of a woman who decides to become a government informant for a period of time. And I felt like I wanted to write that story, both because that is such a prevalent issue in all of our movements, people who are both informants, agents, provocateurs, and also because I wanted to explore some of the complexities of why somebody might become an informant and how that speaks to problems, contradictions, vulnerabilities in our movements.
What kind of feedback did you get on the novel?
I had various people read it. I did not actually have as many readers as with my memoir. With the memoir, I really felt like I needed to ensure that all the people who were touched upon or touched by that history, at least the ones close in, were able to see it and give me feedback and let me know what they thought should be changed, etc. Because it was really trying to, even though it was my story, my perspective, it was trying to reflect the collective history. With the novel, I think some of it was just the liberatory feeling of, okay, this is fiction. I can write it. I can do it in the way that I want to. Which isn't to say I didn't get feedback, but I didn't feel the level of accountability that I did with the memoir. I got feedback from friends, from other writers, and then I also got feedback from some of the people who were depicted, even though in a fictional way, to the extent that I felt like they were recognizable. I wanted to make sure that they, those people felt like they had a say in their portrait. Honestly, I didn't get a lot of pushback about any of it. And perhaps that's because others felt also that, okay, this is a novel, this is her exploration of various topics that is hers to develop. And politically, I think people were pretty much on board with the ways in which I was trying to trace out the different contradictions and conflicts that each character felt. And so I didn't get pushback from that end either. Since it's come out, I've gotten great feedback. People gravitate towards different characters in the book. The book is structured from the point of view of six different women. And as I said before, the stories are threaded together. The protagonist, which I guess is very loosely me, but isn't really me because very lots of differences. But her trajectory follows some of my real life in terms of she's someone who goes underground in the 1980s. And is trying to support the Puerto Rican independence movement, which is where what my history was about. So the protagonist is seen from the points of view of these other people, and then she kind of closes out the novel with her talking from her point of view at the very end of it. And I was able, which I really wasn't sure I could do in the beginning when I first thought of it, to actually project somewhat into the future so that it gave the whole thing an element of speculation and imagination about what types of inventive methods people could possibly use and apply in political action. And I felt like I was able to do that more by projecting it into a future period, not too future. It's set in 2020, which is coming up very soon at this point, but still allowed me some more latitude in terms of trying to figure out a way of talking about things that weren't really literally true. And, you know, I've got some people really like that part. I mean, the political speculation into the future. There are others, a lot of people have really responded to the character of the informer, interestingly enough. I don't know if not responded in the positive sense, but since I think a lot of people who are politically active have had to grapple with issues of informants in, you know, the past decade, that the effort to deal with that really has struck people in a lot of ways. The other one I should say is one of the characters is loosely written to after Marilyn Buck, political prisoner Marilyn Buck, who died in 2010, shortly after she was released from prison. So there are many aspects of that story that are true in real life and then are reflected in the novel. And people who knew Marilyn felt like it was really a very important depiction of not her literally, but many of her concerns and her her struggles, as well as her amazing political determination and insight. So that was very important, has been important to me that people have really responded to that chapter as well.
Do you have any other writing projects on the go at the moment that you want to share with us?
Okay, well, there, you know, I don't have a big major project, but I will say that I have just sent to the printing press a pamphlet that is focused on Palestinian women prisoners, and I will be bringing some of those to the conference that I'm attending in Montreal in November. The pamphlet is called For the Love of Palestine, and it is a compilation of stories that have been collected by other prison solidarity organizations. One of them is Adamir, a Palestinian organization that does prisoner support, and the other is Samidun, that also does Palestine prisoner support. And I had the honor to be part of a delegation, a prisoner solidarity delegation, last March 2016 to Palestine, and this project was catalyzed by that experience of both meeting former prisoners, many prisoners, both men and women, and then when I got back to the United States, trying to think of how I could link some of what I was learning there to the work I do here in the United States with women and transgender prisoners. And so myself and another woman, Anna Henry, who was also part of the delegation and also does the work around women prisoners, we decided to put together this pamphlet. And it's been a very interesting process. We were very glad to be able to partner with both Adamir and Samidun in creating this pamphlet. And I think it's pretty unique in terms of the insight and stories that it is able to share with the larger North American public, because I don't think there is that much information. I mean, there's stuff on the internet, but in terms of a compilation of stories, there isn't that much out there. So I'm really excited about being able to share that and bring that up to Montreal also.
So we are pre-recording this interview for the funding drive episode of the Prison Radio Show, which is happening a few days from now. And we're actually giving away a copy of your novel, Clandestine Occupations, for our annual funding drive. People who pledge $25 or more to the Prison Radio Show have a chance to get a copy of the book. And so my last question is, do you have like a 1 to 2 sentence synopsis that you can give of the book to people who are listening who might be interested in donating to the station and might win a copy of the book?
Always hard for the author to summarize, but I will try. I think, and thank you, I am very honored that you are giving this book away as a prize. I think this book will be of great interest to a wide variety of your listeners. It deals with certain really striking issues around clandestinity, how people and women in particular cope with the conflicts of clandestinity. It is a love story in many parts where people meet each other, women meet other women, and then are unable to really fulfill their relationship because of the constraints of clandestinity. It is also involves love across the bars, because several of the characters have very intense emotional relationships with people who are political prisoners for many years. So I think there really are many interesting, different types of stories that are encompassed in this novel, and I hope that your listeners will contribute at least $25, but more, and win a copy of the book.
That was an interview with Diana Block about her book Clandestine Occupations and her writing process. Diana is coming to Montreal to launch Clandestine Occupations in November. The event will also be a launch for the 2017 Certain Days Political Prisoners Calendar. The launch is happening on November 13th at 5:30 p.m. at the Center for Gender Advocacy's office, which is located at 1500 de Maisonneuve West, and it's on the fourth floor. It's office number 404. The time is presently 11:31, and you're listening to The Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca.
The volunteers, programmers, staff and supporters here at CKUT are all together building a radio without borders during this year's funding drive. And of course, this means having a lot of nourishing, warm food. We want to send all of our appreciation and love to our community of local restaurants.
Le Panneur, Le
Pickup,
L'Escalier, Saint-Viateur,
Bagel, Mango Bay, Casa del Papalo,
Sous le Palmier,
Chitoni, and
Frigo Vert.
Special thanks to the restaurants that donated food for our kickoff dinner. Bishop and Bags, Lawrence,
Delish
Cupcakes,
Lumière du Mile
End, Coco
Local,
Rubs Barbecue, Omnivore, and Sanduchon. Thank you for fueling our bodies with all the energy we need to broaden what is possible in the form of radio.
I didn't speak out about adoption until I actually found out the truth about my adoption. Up until then, I had it buried.
I spent most of my adolescence being very racist towards myself.
You can't just put a child in a good and loving home and think everything will be all right.
Adoption at the moment is kind of skating above critical thinking. It's not an easy thing to talk about because there are competing interests. And whatever you say, someone's going to find it difficult, if not offensive.
This is Pascal.
And I'm Kasai, and we're coming out of the fog. We'll be discussing adoption issues from a critical perspective.
Out of the fog. Every first Friday of the month, 8:30 a.m., join us on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Next up, we have an interview with Helen from the Certain Days Calendar Collective. Helen sat down with the Prison Radio Show to talk about the calendar, to talk about this year's calendar in specific, and also to talk about the calendar as part of our funding drive. Okay, so I'm here with Helen from the Certain Days Calendar Collective. Hi, Helen.
Hello.
Do you want to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about the calendar?
Yep. So the Certain Days calendar, its full title is the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners Calendar, and it is exactly what the name suggests. It's a calendar that you hang on your wall. It's a collaboration between outside anti-prison activists and people in prison, both in terms of its editorial collective. There's three political prisoners who are held in New York State, and then a couple of people here in Montreal, as well as in Ontario and in New York City, who are the outside collective, and then our contributions in terms of the art in the calendars and the writings are also from both prisoners and outside supporters.
And how many years has this project been going on?
The first calendar came out in 2002, so it was produced in 2001, so I guess we're now into year 16, my math is bad. More than a decade,
wow.
Decade and a half of the calendar.
That's awesome. So the calendar, although there's some things that remain the same every year in terms of the layout and the general sort of premise of the project, like you just explained, the theme and the content changes every year. So can you talk a bit about this year's calendar specifically, maybe starting with the theme for this year?
Absolutely. So the theme for this year is sustaining movements. One thing for people that haven't seen the calendar before, it is a calendar, like I say, you know, it has the months, you hang it on your wall, you use it to remember when your dentist appointment is, that type of thing. But it's also sort of like a magazine. So for every month, there's the art and there's the actual calendar month page, but then there's also an article that goes along with it. If you flip to either the back or the front of the calendar, you'll find this article. And we each year have the calendars, the articles, the art pieces, and the little inspirational blurbs on each page revolve around a theme. And those themes are always tied into prison and prison justice, but we try and make them applicable to wider struggles for social justice, because one thing that we believe that prison does, and particularly political imprisonment does, is it separates people inside the prison from freedom struggles that are occurring on the street. But it doesn't have to. If we on the outside remember people inside prison and strive to work together with people on both sides of the wall, then we can build stronger movements and more inclusive movements and movements that are more likely to succeed. One of the questions we've always asked ourselves, both on the outside collective and the prisoners that are involved on an editorial level, is how do we sustain our movements? And it turns out we're not the only ones asking ourselves those questions, because this year, I would say, I've been involved on and off since the beginning of the calendar, and this year I would say we received the greatest response to our call out for submissions. It seems like we really struck a chord with this theme, and that people across different social justice movements are asking themselves those questions too.
Can you maybe give some examples of what are some of the submissions or some of the sort of themes or kind of maybe stuff in common that came in the submissions that sort of was indicative that this really struck a chord with folks?
Well, one thing that we got several of were organizations that had written a piece collectively reflecting on their experience as an organization and how their work either already is doing things that help them sustain their work or what it could be doing. So it And that in itself is heartening, even beyond the articles like that that we were able to include. There was more than the three that are in there. So it seems that, you know, it gave some organizations and projects an opportunity to stop and reflect, which I personally think is one of the most important things for making any kind of social justice work sustainable. Because we're always reacting, right? Like, there's always many, many, many things going on in the world that we need a reaction, that need to be stopped, that need to be changed. So it's very easy to fall into this reactive mode and sort of self evaluation as organizations, as movements, as campaigns, as collectives is so important, to not just repeating the same mistakes over and over and over. So we have several submissions like that. We also have several tributes to people who have made great contributions. In some cases, those are people that have passed away and are being remembered, and in some cases those are people who are alive. Still, we have a portrait of Herman Bell, who's actually one of the political prisoners who's involved in Certain Days, but a portrait of Herman that was done by another political prisoner, Marius Mason. And this is a really, I find, touching and lovely picture that situates Herman in a garden, a community garden, as part of the project that he, in fact, has helped start from beyond the prison wall. So in real life, he has not physically been in the Victory Gardens of the main Victory Gardens project, but in spirit, he's there every time anybody's gardening, because he's part of that project, or has been part of that project from beyond the prison walls. And there's other portraits like that. There's one of Marilyn Buck, a political prisoner who passed away a few years ago. That portrait was done by another political prisoner, Oscar Lopez Rivera. There's a portrait that Leonard Peltier did of a portrait that Leonard Peltier did of Little Robe, who historically is a very important figure in indigenous struggle in North America. There's a portrait of Marsha P. Johnson, iconic, for want of a better word, figure in trans liberation. So it's interesting to me that as a call out to for submissions on sustaining the movement, that people look to specific people in struggle who have inspired them and continue to inspire them.
Speaking of, that specific people in struggle, and you've already mentioned Herman Bell. Herman is one of the sort of main folks inside who's been part of this project since the beginning, if I understand correctly.
Mm-hmm. Herman was actually the person whose idea the calendar it was. He came up with the idea of, hey, let's do a calendar. At that time, prison activists in Montreal had been visiting, corresponding with, building relationships with several political prisoners held in New York State, including Herman and including the other two prisoners who have gone on to be our inside editors, David Gilbert and Robert Seth Hayes. And we were looking for a project to do together. They were already involved in our organizing insofar as we would always discuss the work we were doing on the ground and look to them for mentorship. But we were looking for something that we could actually work on together, and the calendar was that.
Can you talk a little bit about what that process is like, given that working with like three folks on the inside and then the majority or the other part of the calendar collective on the outside?
Well, it's evolved over time. It's funny, like this sustaining movements theme also applies to us as a project now that we've been around for as long as we have. All of our lives have evolved. And one of the things that's evolved is that the three prisoners are actually much further away physically from Montreal. And another thing that's evolved is that the outside collective is no longer all in Montreal. So at the beginning of the project, we would just drive down and visit each of the three inside collective members and discuss content, and now that's no longer a possibility. So more and more, we do still do face-to-face visits, but more and more letters become important, and messages from the three inside editors, outside supporters, have become more important. So in that way, the internet is a tool for us. Even though we can't correspond directly by internet, we can pass a message to, say, Herman's wife and say, could you ask Herman what he thinks of this idea, or could you ask Herman, you know, such and such a question. The other complicating factor on that level is that, of course, these three prisoners, they're all in the same prison system, they're all in the New York State system. And even beyond that, prisoner submissions to the calendar, there's rules around prisoners communicating with each other. So we have to be careful. We can't, you know, send in an article to, say, David Gilbert and say, like, hey, look at this great article written by this other prisoner, because he's not allowed to see that. So, you know, we've worked out strategies along the way to still be able to have meaningful participation by the prisoners. But at the same time, you know, like any prison justice work that I'm sure your listeners will be familiar with, that we have to find creative ways of being able to still communicate, being able to still bounce ideas around.
You've talked already a bit about the content as it relates to this year's theme and described some of the artwork specifically. Is there other aspects of the content you want to mention? Any of the essays folks have submitted or other artwork you want to talk to us about?
Well, one sort of sub-theme, I guess, I didn't really talk about is just those ideas that inspire, or those ideas that sustain. I mean, we're sitting here in studio looking at the back cover so we can see all the art. And the one theme I hadn't really picked up on yet was that of self-care. There's an art piece around self-care and, you know, just the sustainability on a personal level. How can we be involved in struggle with all the challenges, all the losses, all the hardship, but still be able to find inspiration, still be able to maintain our own physical health, still be able to do the other things that we need to do in life, such as raise our children, put a roof over our head, all these kinds of things. And then on an emotional level too, being able to survive, being able to still find inspiration, find joy, and all those other important things. There's both art and articles that speak to the importance of specific principles, specific struggles, like colonialism, and how those need to be borne in mind, you know, in any struggle, not just the struggle against colonialism specifically. So that's all there. One thing that's come out a lot in the submissions, both written and otherwise, has been death. I hate to just put it so bluntly, but particularly within prison, although outside as well, but, you know, the political prisoners in North America come in large part from that upsurge of social justice movements in the 60s, 70s, into the 80s. And so those folks are getting on in years, and folks of those generations are passing away both outside and inside of prison. But inside of prison, their health conditions are exacerbated, obviously, by prison conditions. And dying inside prison is also a whole other ball game in terms of what that looks like than outside. And over the past year, there's actually been a number of political prisoners that have passed away. So we have what I think is a very moving piece in the calendar by Daniel McGowan, who was himself a political prisoner and is now actually a member of our outside collective. We have a piece of artwork that portrays the granddaughter of Abdul Majid, a political prisoner who also died in prison this past year. And so it's something that a number of people have spoken to, just how do we carry forward the work? Like, how do we let the deaths of those political prisoners not be in vain and have them know from, you know, whatever place they're in now that the work is going forward and it's being continued by other people?
It makes those two themes together, or I guess three themes, sort of. It's a really interesting combination in terms of talking about both sustaining movements, but also recognizing that death, and death specifically in terms of the context of like political prisoners and incarceration in general.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one that, I think all people involved in social justice work know that our work is longer than one lifetime. In prison justice work, there's just that added element.
Yeah, for sure. Especially as you mentioned, with things like lack of access to proper health care and folks being, just denied the basic things that they need, obviously. Mm-hmm. So if folks want to go about getting a calendar, how would they do that?
Well, for people that are not in prison and are in Montreal, there are several ways. There's a number of places where they're being sold around town. Le Frigo Vert food store at Concordia, Cuberg Concordia, also at Concordia University, L'Insoumise bookshop. Geez, I should have brought a complete list, but there is a longer list on our website of where to buy. There's also possibility of procuring calendars through our website, certaindays.org, so CERTAINDAYS, no hyphens or anything like that, .org. So people can order directly through the calendar. If you're ordering any amount less than 10, you'll be directed to another website, Left Wing Books, who are handling small orders for us. Another aspect of sustaining our work has been to, for want of a better word, to outsource a bit. We've been more and more working together with other like-minded groups over the years, and so Chris Blabberdeb Publishing, who run Left Wing Books, have been handling small orders for us. But that brings me to another point. I don't know if you were going to ask me about this separately, but people can bulk order the calendar. They can order 10 or more copies and get a discount. The calendar normally sells for $12, but if you bulk order, you buy them for $8 each. And we really, really encourage, well, anyone really, but particularly social justice groups, to bulk order the calendar and then sell them yourselves and use them as a fundraiser, because our dream ultimately is to use the calendar to fuel other forms of social justice organizing. So if there's any group out there, prison related or not, you know, whether it's like a street outreach program or a migrant justice group, or really anything that seeks to make the world a better place and who needs money, because who doesn't, we encourage you to get in touch, bulk order the calendar and use that as a fundraiser. Lastly, in answer to that question, prisoners. The calendar is available for prisoner price of $5. So whether that's the prisoner themselves ordering the calendar directly, or if you're someone listening on the outside who knows of a prisoner who might want this calendar, the price is $5. And so there's a mailing address where you can get in touch. It's Certain Days, care of Cuperg Concordia, Q-P-I-R-G, Concordia, C-O-N-C-O-R-D-I-A, 1455 de Maisonneuve Boulevard West. So that's D-E-M-A-I-S-O-N-N-E-U-V-E, de Maisonneuve, West, Montreal, Quebec. H3G as in go, 1M8, 1M as in move 8. So people can write that address. You can send a check made payable to Kuberg Concordia with calendar in the memo line. Or again, if there is someone who is able to order online, the online system unfortunately charges the non-prisoner price, but a prisoner could instruct a friend or family member on the outside to email us through the website, and we're happy to give you the prisoner price that way.
Speaking of fundraisers and needing money, we're airing this episode as part of our show for CKUT's funding drive. So every year, CKUT hosts a funding drive in which programmers and staff of CKUT work together to raise funds for the station. It takes quite a lot of money and resources to keep this show going, to keep all the shows on CKUT. So if you like CKUT and you like the Prison Radio Show, or even if you don't and you just feel like donating, you can make a donation. We'll tell you how. And one of the things, we have prizes, part of the exciting thing about the funding drive, and one of the prizes that you can get if you donate is actually a Certain Days calendar. So again, if you like CKUT, if you like the Prison Radio Show, please consider making a donation.
Well, I need no more convincing. I am going to donate $20 right here now. I'm pledging $20 to CKUT's Prison Radio Show, me personally, not the calendar, although maybe the calendar will donate too. I cannot underscore how important radio in general and CKUT Prisoner Radio in particular has been to prison justice work, to prisoners just having a lifeline when you don't have access to the internet and having access to information about prison justice. But as an outside organizer, I can think of several instances where CKUT's Prison Radio have been just nothing short of instrumental to prison, the anti-prison work in Montreal. So I strongly encourage listeners to call in and to pledge and to maybe even get a Certain Days 2017 calendar out of the deal.
Thank you so much for, well, first of all, for pledging to donate, but also for all of that. It's true that we know radio is one of the few forms of media that folks on the inside tend to have more regular access to, and part of what we obviously keep in mind here on the Prison Radio Show in terms of wanting to diffuse information as well as report on information so that folks inside who maybe don't have access to the internet don't have access to other ways of getting this news are able to hear about some of the things that are going on and hear about projects like the Certain Days calendar. Thank you so much for coming in, Helen. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
No, I think we've covered it all. Thanks so much, Noah.
Okay, well, thanks. That was an interview with Helen from the Certain Days Calendar Collective. In order, if you want to get a Certain Days calendar, as Helen mentioned, if you are not in prison, you can do that by either going online, or there's various locations throughout Montreal where you can purchase one in person. And for folks inside who might want a calendar, you can write to Certain Days, care of Kuberg Concordia, 1455 de Maisonneuve West, Montreal, Quebec, and the postal code is H3G1M8. Folks on the outside can also sponsor someone on the inside and get a calendar to folks inside that way. The time is presently 11:54, and you're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. Both of the interviews we heard on today's show are also going to be part of an event that we mentioned just a bit ago, so there's going to be a launch for both Diana Block's book, we heard from Diana earlier on the show, as well as the 2017 Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar, which we just heard an interview about. The event will be taking place on Sunday, November 15th at 5:30 p.m. at the Center for Gender Advocacy, which is located at 1500 de Maisonneuve West, and it's office number 404, so it's on the fourth floor. It's the closest metro is Guy Concordia. And the launch will, again, feature the 2017 Certain Days calendar, as well as Diana's book, Clandestine Occupations and Imaginary History. The event is free. the calendar and copies of Clandestine Occupations, as well as other prison and prisoner-related books, will be available for sale at the event. There will be snacks, coffee, and juice. The space is wheelchair accessible, although just to note that the ramp to the building is quite steep. So if that's a concern, please do get in touch. There will be childcare available on site, and there will be whisper translation from English to French. So, again, today is a special funding drive episode of the Prison Radio Show. CKUT's funding drive is currently going on. It's been going on since the 20th, and it's going on until this coming Monday, October 31st. The funding drive is an annual event that CKUT does in order to help raise funds for the station, in order to keep shows like the Prison Radio Show and other so many different kinds of shows running on CKUT. So if you like the Prison Radio Show, if you want to support us, again, radio is one of the forms of media that folks in prison often have the most reliable access to. So it's a really particularly important form of media in terms of what we do on the Prison Radio Show, but radio in general. Please do help support this. So each show as part of the funding drive has a goal. Our goal here on the Prison Radio Show is to raise $600. And so far we have raised close to half of our goal. Thank you so much to Helen and Adrian for donating already. Again, if you donate more than $25, you can get one of the exciting prizes that we have. So we have a whole bunch of books to give out, including Clandestine Occupations by Diana Block, Condemned by Keith Lamar, Jailbreak Out of History by Butch Lee, and several other really exciting books, as well as copies of the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar. If you want to donate, there's quite a few ways you can do that. So you can do it by phone, by phoning 514-907-9424 during the funding drive. And if you want to make a pledge after the funding drive, you can still do that by phoning 514-448-4041, extension 8991. You can also donate online at ckut.ca/donate. You can donate by mail. The address is Radio CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, postal code H3A2B3. Or you can donate in person at the CKUT station during office hours. Pledges can be paid in cash, check, Visa, MasterCard, or PayPal. So again, please do consider supporting the Prison Radio Show if you're able to do so. And to wrap up today again, you've been listening to the Prison Radio Show, and we air twice a month on CKUT. If you want to check out past episodes of our show, you can do that at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Prison Radio Show. We're on the air on the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday at 11 a.m. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Thursday, November 10th at 5 p.m. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, you can contact us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Folks can also leave a message on our listener comment line at 514-448-4041, extension 2547. If you're in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. Feel free to write us at the Prison Radio Show, or simply write PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, postal code H3A2B3. Thank you for tuning in to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name's Noah. I've been your host for today's show. Please consider making a donation as part of CKUT's funding drive, and please stay tuned.